Welcome to New Thinking for a New World, a Tilburg Foundation podcast. I am Alan Stoga, your host. Each week, I bring you conversations with people who think differently about the great issues that are shaping our world. Geopolitics, disruptive tech, mass migration, the changing climate, culture wars, all of it is grist for our mill. I hope you enjoy listening. I also hope you will let me know what you think and that you join the conversation at tilburgfoundation.org. And now for today's episode of New Thinking for a New World.
No serious scientists debate that the pace of climate change is accelerating, and most acknowledge that the Congo and the Amazon River basins are ground zero where the transformation or the potential transformation from rainforest to savanna would have catastrophic consequences. Yet both basins, the so-called lungs of the planet, are increasingly stressed, inching towards tipping points. Can anything be done to avoid or even delay that outcome, which by all estimations would have profound and frankly deadly impact on millions of people in Africa and Latin America? Maybe, maybe not. But some people are at least trying. My guest today is Tanya Trinidadje, who helps lead Sutafor, a forestry company in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Located in the Mai-Dombe province in western Congo, her company is one of the rare forestry companies committed to operating legally and responsibly in the rainforest. Welcome, Tanya, to New Thinking for a New World.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
By now, most people understand the dangers of deforestation in the Congo and in the Amazon. What they might not know is the extent and pace of the degradation of the Amazon rainforest is considerably worse than in the Congo. That's the good news. But there's bad news that goes with that. But indeed, your country, the DRC, has one of the lowest deforestation rates in the region. At first blush, just the idea of a forestry company in a forest the world desperately needs to remain a forest sounds like a contradiction in terms. Why does it make sense to you?
Well, the image of a forestry company, I think within the decades, have been changed for some people. Of course, people that are not aware and not well informed about forestry don't think the same way and think what you're saying. We are doing management of the forests since decades. You have companies that don't respect the law, the legislation, all the studies that have been done from experts. But the way we are managing these forests are sustainable. I know it's a word that many people prefer that you say it's sustained, but I can tell you that we are doing sustainable management. What does that mean? We are not harvesting without knowing what we are doing. So the forest exists since 1994, and we were the pioneers developing the management plans in DRC even before the forestry code obliged. We started doing the inventories in the forest in 2005, and it took us 15 years to achieve all the inventories. When I talk about inventories, it's about humans, so the social economic studies, it's the cartography of the forest, it's the diameters, all the diameters existing with the species we are going to cut. And another thing that is very interesting in DRC is that the DRC has more than 700 species of wood, and we are only working on 15 to 20 species. Before, it was more species. I can tell you we were working on 30, but with the decrease of the demands in the wood market, I can tell you nowadays we are only working on 15 to 20 species. And
let me interrupt only to ask you to put some dimensions on this.
Yes.
The DRC has something like 150 million hectares of forest, which is massive. How much does Sutafor work on?
Sutafor, with harvesting concessions, has nowadays 1 million hectares. So when you compare with 155 million hectares, it's not that thing. And when I talk about 1 million hectares, we are working on management plans. So we are only working on a little piece of the forest. And with the rotation in 5 years, so we can assure the regeneration of the species. So all these were done by external experts. We worked with a French international company to do all the management plans. And so and when I talk about 15 species in such a little space we are working on, it doesn't represent. So I can tell you we are harvesting an average of one tree for 2 or 3 hectares. So we are cutting one tree in what, 2 or 3 hectares of forest.
The obvious question to a novice is, how can that be profitable? Because you're a profit-making company. You're in business to earn money. You want to earn it responsibly. You've worked very hard, you've just said, over the last decades. How is it one tree for 2 or 3, 4 hectares is a lonely tree?
Exactly.
So how does that work?
It's a very good question. With the time passing, because we are conscious that logging is no more the trend job. And that is why after I'm going to tell you what did we do to maintain the work we have been doing for decades. We belong to the formal sector in DRC, or the formal forestry sector. What does that mean? That means that we are working with legal authorizations and under management plans. And so the market we have chosen permits us to have more benefits in terms of benefits than the other markets. The normal market, most of the operators in DRC export are in Asia. We, as we make part of CITES, so we are, I don't know if you know, the agreement that exists for some species that are considered more valuable, but to be authorized to harvest these species, we have to respect many legal documents. So we are one of the fewest in DRC that can do, like, the species Wenge, Aphromosia, these species, it's not everyone that can harvest. And with the possibility to export it to Europe, for instance, we can have more profitable price than all the other species that everyone can harvest in DRC.
And to understand, the business model is integrated. You manage the forests, you harvest, you ship to the coast. Do you transform it into product as well?
That was I wanted to tell you, though. So when I say we are one of the fewest companies in DRC that has been harvesting, I'm talking about the formal sector, the legal and formal sector. What does that mean? We are obliged from the law to transform. So 70% of our production is transformed. Plywood in decking, and 30% we export in logs. So that is what the law obliges, and we are doing that since decades. We have 3 transformation factories in DRC. So that is why also our impact in terms of workers is very high, because we are managing 2,000 workers in DRC, because we also have the factories.
You have concessions for a lot of land. Some of it is in conservation, as I understand it. Some of it is still this actively logged, harvested portion. Can you explain how that works and why you've been shifting into a conservation mode?
Okay. So Sodefor Group has the concession contract since decades with the government, because we pay all the taxes since all this time. I can tell you that we were submitted to 3 legal reviews in the last 15 years. And all the 3 legal reviews, one was financed, 2 of them were financed by the World Bank, and the other one was financed by the European Union. And all the concessions we are managing had 20 out of 20 in the legal review. because all the documents are there for a long time. And what did we think? Since I can tell you when there was the economic crisis, a big economic crisis by 2013. And after with COVID, and we have been suffering a lot in terms of markets. We thought all the efforts we have been doing to protect these forests the best way we can. Of course, we could do better. Yes, of course, but we are not heroes. So we need so many things with us and stability in all kinds of way to do it better. So we thought logging markets are becoming very difficult to survive if we want to do it correctly.
And to survive as a business.
Exactly, to survive as a business. Because it's a sector that the fiscality is very high. We are not many actors in DRC, so the fiscality increases, of course, because every hope is put on the few companies that are still there working. So it makes very hard all the social component, because the law in DRC provides many social activities we are obliged to do, but we are also obliged to do RSC, being responsible. So we are not only doing social with the obligations by the law, but also by our CSR, corporate social responsibility of the company. Exactly. I'm sorry. And we are doing it, and it makes an effort, a really huge effort. So what happens with that? Our benefit has been decreasing since...
Your profits.
Our profits.
Profitability.
Exactly. Have been decreasing since many years. And... it comes to a time that we thought, is it possible to go on with this business or not? But I arrived in DRC 13 years ago. And when I saw all the work that have been done with communities, with the government, because we are working in provinces that are very isolated in DRC. So the logistics are very difficult, and the many accessibility to basic things, it's very remote. So we thought it was not time to give up. And what was the solution was to give back the concessions to the state, because in DRC, we are not the owners of the lands. We are only managing the lands. But we thought, no, we are going to do an effort, and because we really believe in what we're doing since decades. And we think we have done all the best we could. And we didn't find partners that we could say, okay, take the concessions and do as best as you can. So we are doing an effort. Our profitability has been decreasing, as I told you. And we converted these concessions. 2/3 of our concessions nowadays are in conservation status. We did it in the end of 2020.
And define conservation status. What does that mean?
Conservation, most of the people think we cannot touch the forest. It's not true. We have to develop techniques and activities that are going to assure that the forest will be protected. It doesn't mean that population cannot cut a tree. So with the management plans we have in the concessions, we have rural zones where most of the population are living in. And in these rural zones, there are rules that permits the population to cut some trees, to have access to energy. They can do agriculture. But in all the other zones of the concessions, we are meant to develop activities that will compensate the populations that are living in terms of also profitability, and to be sure that this forest will be protected and will not be destroyed. So this is a conservation. We are not allowed to cut trees. So we finish with logging.
But people who live there can cut trees for their use.
In certain areas. Yeah.
Lumber point of view, from a foresting point of view, you can't.
We cannot. We cannot anymore.
What do war lessons from Gaza, rethinking education, peace in Ukraine, and visionary leadership have in common? They are all themes from recent episodes of this podcast. Check out more episodes on talbergfoundation.org or on a platform of your choice.
An obvious question is, you're a business. How do you make money? You're not a charity. You're not a philanthropy, although you have those inclinations.
Okay. So
how do you make money doing that?
The first strategy we put in place was to maintain, because we are not only in Maindombe province. We are present in four provinces in DRC.
All in the west?
No. So going north, northeast. So Maindombe, Equator, Mongala, Tchopo. Okay, going up. And we are, all our concessions are within the Congo River. It accompanies the river. So from Kinshasa to the forest concession, we are like 2,000 kilometers away. And what was the model we thought we had to begin? Because our goal is in the future, in the present future, to become only in conservation status, but we couldn't do it like this because communities and population depend a lot on us in terms of logistics. What does this mean? In every province, we maintained one concession in harvesting status, and all the other concessions around are in conservation status. What did we say? Because before doing this, we had negotiations with the communities that were living in the concessions, and we informed them. And we had to have a document FPIC in English, that says the population consents this new changing of the status of the concessions. And what was our argument, because they know us since we work together since many years, is that we are not going to, because they associate conservation to an isolement, a total isolation in deep forest. We said, no, the company so therefore will still go on. And we have barges, we have boats that go up the river with the population. And after we put the logs in to transform then in Kinshasa, but the population comes into the boats and transport their goods like maize, all the agriculture products they are developing. And so this was a mechanism to continue having profitability, but decreasing, just surviving, and to maintain peace in the concessions. Because if we don't have peace with the communities, we cannot work and we cannot go forwards. So to resume, I think we decided and we chose to think about future and to prepare the future that was not easy to change all in a sudden. And our profitability has been decreasing to survive until we are ready, and we are already ready to develop conservation project that can be profitable and to continue this.
So how can the conservation be profitable?
Well,
give me an example.
Okay. I'm going to give you DRC examples, because there are many ways to do conservation all in many countries away from DRC. But DRC nowadays, the legislation is very limited yet because it's new in DRC. DRC has a strong legislation in forestry. It was one of the first countries in Africa developing the forestry code, but it was directed to harvesting. And in 2018, the first law to legislate conservation aspects came out. And but only in one methodology with RED Plus. The Environment Ministry, he has been working together with many partners, international partners, to develop other methodologies. Now, I think the most feasible methodology that could be implemented in DRC could be nature-based solution that is very large and gives many possibilities to do the protection of the forests and the other ecosystems. It's not only forests. So nowadays, we can develop projects that we're going to enter in a framework, in an international framework, like VERA, the Americans, in frameworks like VCS, like Veritas, so many indicators and legal frameworks that can have to come and to verify and to confirm the legality of the conservation activities. And with the mechanisms put in the fields to develop conservation activities, we can generate carbon credits. And we are also talking about biodiversity credits. In DRC, it's not yet happening, but we have all the tools to do it. I told you later that we have the inventories of our concessions. I didn't tell you about the inventories of the fauna, the biodiversity. So with this, we can know, and we have always been respecting this for decades. If you see in the map of the concession that here you have elephants or here you have bonobos, we are not entering in that forest since we are harvesting. And now with conservation, it can help us to develop programs to enter in these famous credits, not only carbon credits, but also biodiversity credits.
So that's the key to the private sector staying engaged or potentially staying engaged in the forest.
I wouldn't say like that. I would say that is the way to survive in conservation. It's the way we know it exists. If you propose us another scheme that will generate funds that can maintain and to put sustainable these activities, we are going to enter in it. But since now the only way we know it can be profitable to continue doing that is through the carbon credit.
But that's terrific, because otherwise the private sector disappears. The legitimate private sector disappears. The illegitimate private sector will always be there. But the health of the forest obviously requires somebody doing this work. And the odds that a private sector company, motivated as private sector companies are, to a sustained and sustainable future, that makes sense. That just makes terrific sense. Do you think it'll work?
I believe it can work, because I don't know another solution for those who are still in these remote areas to do it. I don't understand why this theme about carbon credits has been so controversial, because if the world proposes another model, I'm sure we are going to accept. Now, we cannot think, world cannot think that we are only working as an NGO, because we are not an NGO. We have already thought many times to become a foundation or an NGO and to put private sector apart, because maybe we could have more help to do what we are believing we are doing good. But we haven't had the opportunity to do it. And since now, the only thing we know is that if we do it correctly, and if we have auditors that come from outside and civil society to come, or independent observers, we are always open doors and we are always ready to do better.
Let's leave it there. Thank you, Tanya. I've always wondered how it's possible to save the forest if the private sector is not engaged. I work in both the for-profit and nonprofit sectors, and I'm pretty sure the private sector is going to be more innovative, more likely to be consistent and effective over time. So I'm beyond delighted that we had this conversation. I know it's controversial, but thank God you're doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. And I wanted to say something. All these years, we have been assisting to funding from all the world, and funding with government projects, what I think it's very good. But one thing I think it's not so good, and I think it has to change, is to include social private sector in these projects, because we could do a lot more, and our impact could be even bigger. So one thing I want to transmit to all the initiatives, financing initiatives doing, I'm talking about DRC, that think about the private sector. I know the image some years ago was not very positive, but I think we are actors, important actors in the field that believe what we're doing and we can do better with all the actors together.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New Thinking for a New World. I'm Alan Stoga, podcast host, and I look forward to your joining our next conversation. Remember, tell us what you think at telbergfoundation.org.